Merry Nixmas brings you
Phoenix City.
Welcome to Phoenix City. Thanks for listening. I'm joined by Dave and Cam. How are you doing, lads?
Not too bad.
I am excellent, mate. I've signed off from work for the year, and I don't go back until middle of February. So signed off this afternoon even. So I'm in a world of happiness right now.
Yeah, buddy. Are those updates every hour on the hour of how long you had?
Yeah, worth it. It was great. One of my colleagues ended up sending me one when she was about to knock off that said 8 minutes. So, you know, we're all in the same boat. We're all keen to tag out.
Oh, no one's pissed off at you because they're not keen to tag out. That's nothing to do with it, Cam. It's the fact that we've got more days to go.
I'm off for almost 2 months, mate.
Yeah. So. I like to round down. Maybe we'll send you a countdown when it gets closer, you're going back. 1 hour to go, Cam. 1 hour to go.
Yeah. That'll be in the morning of Valentine's Day while I'm trying to get the kids to school.
Well, that will be a Valentine's present for your wife. So get rid of you. Should we talk football?
Probably. That's why we're here.
Nah. Well, unfortunately, there's not a whole lot of joy to talk about. Well, we'll start at the high point. FFA Cup game versus Avondale. Pretty much a mostly first-string team, Wayne Soterio, Piscopo Ball, Pennington being one of the newbies in, partner Roofer in the midfield, then Sutton, Laws, Payne, Fenton, and Sale at the back, Sutton being the other person that had come in at left-back. Pretty good start, 3-0 after 24 minutes. You've got to rate that. And Soterio, whatever boots he was wearing, maybe he should wear those a lot more.
Yeah, because I mean, these weren't just easy poachers' goals or anything like that. These were two very good finishes from him, which is the thing he's always criticised for. I mean, just fantastic strikes. I wish we could see him do that all the time because it's the thing we all know. If he could add to his game, he'd be a fantastic A-League striker.
Yeah, they were very textbook opportunities for Soterio, both on the breaking past the high line, and normally we see him either shank these into Rosied or just straight into the keeper, but not bad.
Yeah, I think it's almost the thing we've talked about with him before is when he doesn't overthink it, he can actually strike a ball. And I think for whatever reason, these he just hit. He didn't think about it, didn't go, oh, I should take a few touches and do anything. He just hit them and they went in.
Yeah, and it was a perfect strike for all of them. The first one was a lovely through ball. And obviously his pace beats the defender, which isn't surprising when you're playing against a semi-pro and you're a full pro. You should be fitter and faster. But gets the ball and then, just laces through it near post and keeper doesn't really stand too much of a chance. It was really, really nicely taken.
Yeah, it just takes it first time. Doesn't take a touch, just hits it.
Yeah. I wonder because we mentioned this on the previous pod, I wonder whether they have actually been taking him for specific finishing training because that's what it looked like, right? It looked like he'd been working on it. He knew what he had to do without having to think about it. It just came naturally and he just did that. Whereas previously it doesn't look like he's got that kind of thing in his wheelhouse.
No, I would put this down to just a lower level of opposition and less pressure on him. Like it just feels like he's not putting that pressure on himself. He's not feeling that pressure. And so he's just able to play with a little more freedom. Like that chip was, he scored a chip like that before, and when that ball bounces up, he's just looking. I don't think he's ever a guy that's going to chip the keeper when the ball's on the ground, you know. But when the ball's bouncing up, he just goes with his gut instinct and goes, "Yeah, keeper's probably." Yeah,
he got one in Eden Park, didn't he?
Yeah,
he
I think
Eden
so.
Park against, I think it was Melbourne City, from a long ball that ball flicked on, and then he chipped the keeper from there. I remember that. That was quite cleverly played, actually.
Yeah,
so fair enough. It's in the warehouse.
I think the keeper gives him the opportunity as well here.
Yeah,
you know, the keeper has come, and I'm not saying he's woefully out of position or anything, but it's definitely a keeper who's not a professional at that level. You know, it's a step down in keeper quality, and it kind of gives him a bit more opportunity. There's a bit more sight of goal there for that long range chip. And the first one isn't really a chip, but I mean, it beats him at the near post from how many yards out. You know, there's a bit of a gap there that you'd expect probably an A-League keeper wouldn't have left.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
I agree with that. But again, they were small margins. Beating any keeper at the near post is pretty reasonable. And a chip and not making yourself look like an absolute mug is also not bad. Pretty good. I mean, obviously, the being up 3-0 and after 20-odd minutes, a very un-Phoenix start. Us being up at all early doors is not something that we're particularly flash about. But capped off nicely by a moment of what you'd probably call absolute madness by, what's his name, Blake Carpenter from Avondale, who has just gone absolutely through someone.
He's gone through Fenton. It felt like they gave away a sloppy third goal, which should have been, you know, Roofers, and ended up being Wayne's. And this happened, what, a minute, 2 minutes after that? It was like the red mist had descended, and it's like he couldn't really cope with the fact that they were being properly outplayed. And it was an incredibly rash, completely unnecessary challenge out by the sideline near halfway.
Yeah.
There was nothing was to be gained from making a challenge there, even a normal challenge where you're not trying to break someone's leg. So yeah, it was ridiculous. It was awful, awful. It made the team look thuggish. Like then, and obviously they're not a thuggish team because they won their first cup in their history not too long ago at state level. So
yeah, won the VPL, didn't they?
I thought they won the knockout competition
maybe.
In the same state. But either way, they've won a cup this year. So they've obviously got some talent. They're obviously a decent team. But that challenge, along with the one that Ball rode immediately prior to the red card challenge, it just made them look thuggish, and they're not. And they kind of let themselves down, and that was the pinnacle of letting themselves down.
Yep. Yeah, I guess that was basically all done by that stage. And Uffy, I think, just decided that was it. They seem to sit on it after that. I mean, fair enough. You're playing a midweek game, and you know you've got a game on the weekend, your league game.
We still had plenty of chances after that, but you're right. It didn't feel like we were chasing those chances.
No.
They were just coming as a natural consequence of having that extra man.
Yeah. I think there's no thing to gain from putting them to the sword here, right? Like three goals up and a man down for them, you had no reason to try and go, oh, let's do them by 20. I don't think they would have done anyone any favors. I think sitting on it, giving some people some minutes and that kind of stuff was much more important. So I can understand why Uffy made that call. But I mean, conversely, you could also maybe say Avondale needed to fire up. You know, they'd spent 25 minutes not in this game. Obviously, the way in which they kind of were like, let's wake up, boys, didn't go so well. I mean, a couple, as you say, bad challenges in a row, one of them being a red card, doesn't help. But I think they probably did start to get into the game a little more after that happened. They obviously needed to, having lost a man. They'd never looked like they were going to be winning this at all, but I do think they settled into their work a bit and woke up.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, they had a bit of a slow start, and that you can't have a slow start when you're also playing up a league to opposition. So, yeah, that's the end of them. We were scheduled to be playing Melbourne City tonight as we're recording, but unfortunately, COVID has reared its ugly head again. And what was the wording? A player within one of the two teams has tested positive.
Well, since that point, it's been announced that Melbourne City have had six players test positive.
Yeah.
So which means they've got all of six players were vaccinated. So, and all feel well, but obviously there is a protocol that they have to follow for the situation. It also meant that because they played the Victory the previous weekend, they've had to isolate too and get tested. And their game this afternoon has also been called off. There was another game, which is called off this weekend coming, which was Brisbane Brisbane missed a charter flight because of a COVID issue, but not the COVID issue with the league. There was something else going on, which meant that their flight
got delayed.
Yeah, so they can't make it for their next game as well. So there's been a massive consequence, like just on games from this situation. But the other consequence is at the FFA Cup, we've been using it to give the squad a run. When we look at things like we've called in Van Hatten, we've called in Sermon to come over from the academy. Both those guys got a run against Avondale, and I think they probably would have got a run against City if we actually managed to get that game in tonight. And obviously, Henry Gray has also gone over as goalkeeping cover, and he may have, if we'd progressed a bit further, may have had a chance of getting in an FA Cup game too. So there's more of a consequence for the squad here as well.
I wouldn't have thought that he would, to be quite honest. I think Paulson needs some minutes.
Paulson will be your choice. Yes, he will be your choice. But one keeper's gone down. If you only got two of them,
but
he's going to get some minutes.
I think barring injury, Paulson's playing every single minute. One, he's a known quantity, and two, he just hasn't had minutes. So if we can get him FFA Cup minutes, better to do that than throw him in the league like we had to on the weekend.
Sure, he did have minutes pre-season, but again, that is pre-season. So
it's a fair way away. We should crack on into the games from the weekend, even though it does not feel that appetizing at the moment. And I'm sure if you saw the games, you'll understand why. So Sunday, we had the women playing first against Sydney. And unfortunately, it did not go well. Wynnum did start, which was I was making a particular bent for. I thought she's been really good so far this season. And obviously with Jale going out, we really needed something up top. But yeah, unfortunately, without Jale there, the team looked a bit toothless. And between that and, her ability to hold the ball in that upper midfield just was so obviously missing. Just we couldn't hold the thing at all. It was a horrible watch. You could tell that they were trying their guts out and absolutely running themselves to oblivion. But, there were some quality players in that Sydney team. Vine on the right-hand side was destroying Vosper, something awful. I really felt sorry for Vosper because she's, Vine is obviously a very good player.
Yeah, I think this in some ways is probably what we expected the season to be a little bit like. It looks like a strong, experienced professional outlet against a semi-pro side. It's what we see in the FFA Cup. It's that kind of level. And I think, sadly for the Phoenix, I'm not saying they're a semi-pro side, but I think the recruitment was very late. There was the limitations on what they were able to do there, and you do have a fair few players out there who just don't have the experience of some of the other outlets in the A-League I don't know how you're going to bridge that gap. I think it's going to be a tough old season and some beats like this are going to be on the cards. As you say, the kind of intent and the effort is certainly there, but the experience just isn't. So hopefully they can take some stuff and learn from that and keep growing as a side, because that's what this season really needs to be about. It's about taking experience and growing into next year. We talked about it in the preseason when we thought they probably would take some thumpings and said, but this is about blooding some new players, blooding some youth and building. This is not a 1 year plan. This is a multi-year plan. And hopefully they can work through that and keep growing. Cause as you say, this was not a great performance, but it's not through lack of efforts. This didn't look like disinterested players out there. This looked like players who were just beaten by a better side.
Yep. Yeah. The ability to hold onto the ball and at least kind of, get your foot on the ball and try to slow Sydney down was just something that was unfortunately lacking, that experience kind of thing. What we saw Taylor do for the men's team last year to just get everyone calm back down and focusing on what they needed to do rather than just trying to rush everything. It definitely looked like that. And unfortunately there's not a lot of experience, in that back four and through the middle. Obviously, Gomez has a little bit of experience, but Jale missing, really, we struggled there. I thought Kate Taylor was fantastic again. She really put in a shift and against some quality opposition. I thought she was particularly sharp. Barry looked pretty good, but she had a couple of weird little errors that, I'll put down to experience, but she looks a good unit as well. It's just, like they combined pretty well. They got caught out once, but yeah, unfortunately, like I said, Bospa, she struggled.
I think the big question has to be the midfield, doesn't it? The big question for the team at the moment is that you've got some centre-backs who are performing, but they're performing because they have to perform, not because of the stuff that's occasionally getting through. So fixing the issues in front will resolve the pressure on the back, and that's been the way for the season so far in each game, and it looks like that may continue for at least the foreseeable future until the guys get enough experience and enough positional knowledge at a pro level to be able to, you know, close that turnstile, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Gomez is, she reminds me a lot of Devlin. She just harries interiors, and unfortunately that will mean that she doesn't hold her position as well. And there's no one of that defensive mindset to kind of play alongside her, if you know what I mean.
Gomez is a good player.
She is fantastic.
There's no question there. But again, you're having one, effectively, she's an eight. But what we probably need at this point is a couple of sixes, and we just don't have that at this point in time.
We need someone to sit back and just let her go about and cry havoc, basically, through the midfield and go through people and do whatever. I can't think of a good example in the women's game at the moment, but the Steinman, the classic Steinman protection layer.
Sure. Sure. The McAlady role, which has been, you know, cliched to death, but that's exactly the kind of thing that you need right now.
Yep.
And whether we can bring that in, whether we've got a player that we haven't seen who can actually provide that kind of cover, I would assume that we'd have tried that by now because they'd be showing stuff in training if there was.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think there needs to be another answer. And if that means changing formation to having two sixes and sacrificing something elsewhere, or even two eights and a six, so one can hold, then, you know, that might be what needs to happen. The other problem, of course, is that we're not looking like scoring, and he can't really sacrifice anything further up. It's a hard, Gemma has a massive, massive question on her hands about how to solve that problem, and I can't answer that. I don't know how she's going to do it. To me, it's very obvious what the issue is, but seeing the issue and being able to identify the issue is very different to being able to solve that problem. And obviously, Gemma is the coach for a reason. She's a very, very good coach, quite very experienced. She has the ability to fix it. I just hope that the personnel that we have there are the personnel that can help her do it.
Yeah, I look at that team and I'm kind of like, okay, you can probably pick out the 11 best players, but the problem is you've got a lot at the back and a lot at the, you know, and a few at the front, you know, are attacking, and there's just kind of that no one in that midfield that really stands up as an all round kind of strategic tactical player. There's obviously some skills in there, but we saw
the talented group of women. It is a talented group of women. There's no doubt. They're just young and inexperienced, and that's fine.
It feels like they just don't know. There's quite a few of them in there that are really good athletes, but aren't quite sure of their position or what they should be doing. And maybe even that there's someone, you know, that the team doesn't quite have that balance. It's unfortunate. I mean, we saw Wynnum get closest to scoring, but even then her instinct was to pass, even though she got inside the box straight on the keeper. Not a great angle, mind, but a better angle than where Vine scored her first one. Which was not the greatest goal, seeing as there were three defenders on the inside and no attackers, and Vine managed to poke it past our keeper at that near post. Yeah. That was.
I think sadly you can say that about basically all the goals as well. They were incredibly easy to score. They basically could walk it into the back of the net. Just the urgency wasn't there on those chances. I mean, they had some other really good chances we scrambled for, but some of those ones they scored, you were just like, what is everyone doing there? The urgency just kind of vanished for a brief window, and Sydney were there and ready to pounce on that.
It was just that momentary hesitation that kills you. I mean, I think it was the third goal. It was the Sydney right back that scored it inside the six. So they'd obviously committed up, but they were obviously felt so comfortable on top that, you know, your fullback's drifting into the 6-yard box. Those are the ones that kind of hurt you. But, I'm not sure quite where they go from here. It feels like you need a formational change, but I'm not sure that the players are there for that at the moment. I don't see trimming this number of options short of basically just going, okay, being patient and letting the players work themselves into this league.
I think that's right. I think there's some learnings to be had, but as we know, it's a development season and it's pretty early in the season. I think now's not the time to throw out the baby with the bathwater. You don't need to change anything drastic at this point. Maybe those drastic changes do need to come down the line, but I think at this point you need to focus on what you're trying to do, not necessarily about the results on the field or what other teams are doing. I think you need to view this for what it is. It's not, we're not going out there to win the league. Eking out every point is not the goal here. It's a development season, and I think you should treat it like that.
Perhaps treating it like the way that we've treated the men's resis in the National League up to this point.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess that we got our expectations and our hopes up after that first game. It turns out that maybe Western Sydney were not representative of the league and a bit of a shambles.
To be fair, we said at the time that they didn't play particularly well. They had their opportunities still, the two very clear ones that they didn't take, and we get that point from that. And it was a very good performance from our defence in that game. I think Dave makes a very valid point. You know, we shouldn't throw the baby out with bathwater, to coin Dave's phrase. I think if you want to resolve that issue, there may need to be recruitment in the next window. But whether that talent is currently available is a different question. Whether you want to go, actually, we just want to stick with the women that we've got, because we know that next season they will be so much better for the experience that they get from this season, and trying to solve these problems that are going to come up as pro footballers, are going to come up all the time, trying to solve these problems within the squad is going to be excellent experience, not just for them, but for the coaching group as well.
Yep, I think that is fair. The one piece of good news that has come out for the women's team is that they have a new front of shirt sponsor, a specific one, as opposed to the, the campus? Sorry.
NZCIS.
Yeah, they weren't the official front of shirt sponsors. They were on the front of the shirt for that game because they were the main sponsor. But Shot Beverages, SHOTT Beverages, has signed on. I think that's a testament to probably having seen some pretty gutsy performances and putting their mouth with their money where their mouth is. So that's a positive. The fact that we've seen three really strong efforts, and there's generated enough interest that the commercial parties have come on board.
Yeah, which is fantastic. I can say that, obviously I work in the club space, and you know, we've got a strong women's club, and I can tell you that whilst there's a lot of big talk when it comes to supporting women's sport, there are that many who are willing to stump up the cash. That's not to say that, you know, we don't have fantastic sponsors. My club are very lucky to have a couple very good sponsors for our women's team. Sponsorship dollars are easier to come by in the men's space in sport, and I think it's sad that's the case, but it's good to see some brands are stepping up and getting behind it, because I think it's such a growth area and it's such a thing that we need to support in order to help it get to where it should be. The only reason it's lagging behind is that we've not supported it financially for so many years. You know, a professional game in New Zealand is going to bring that on in leaps and bounds.
Yep.
Yeah, here's hoping. And speaking of hope, we had the men playing Sydney straight after this. Sydney team was sitting at the bottom of the table, unlikely as it sounds, really, really stinking up the joint, to be quite frank. I've seen one and a half of their games and some of the highlights, and boy, it has not been great. But as is the Knicks way, we have turned that around for them. Men's team was pretty much what you would expect from the lineups. We had, he says, buying time while he looks it up, Sotirio Wayne up top, Piscopo, Lewis, Rufo, Ball, Sutton, Laws, Payne, Fenton, and Sale. It did not look good from minute one, did it?
No.
I felt like we were missing the experience up top of Hooper, who's obviously out with a family emergency at this point in time and won't be back till next week. It certainly felt like you're missing something like that. But I think Piney made the excellent point on Twitter after the game, where we are missing Davila, we're missing Devlin, and we're missing Taylor. Those three guys would have made a staggering difference to the way the team is playing at this point.
Yeah, I totally concur about Taylor, to be quite honest. Laws and Payne, despite the number of games they've clocked together, I swear they're getting worse as a combination. Normally we see Laws make a few mistakes, but it's starting to creep into Payne's game, which I'm really concerned about. There was at least two gilt-edged opportunities where he should have been marking someone. They had numbers back, and I don't know whether he switched off or this communication issue or what, but he was standing in no man's land and there was someone unmarked. Camp Sober blasted one over from basically the penalty spot. I swear it went into orbit. He's been out of form so much, but yeah, that back four just did not look like they had a lot to do with each other, and they weren't getting a whole lot of protection, like the women's game as well.
Yep.
Yeah. And that showed particularly when we'll get to it in the second goal, to be honest. If you look at the first goal that Cam Sober scored, it highlights exactly what you're talking about Freeman in the box. And he was free for a long time. And there were bodies back there. There was, I think, 7 Phoenix outfield players, possibly 8 Phoenix outfield players in the box when he scored that goal. And he was completely free to take a chest or take at least a touch and control the ball before blasting it from the edge of the 6 yards.
Yep.
And yeah, and he's got all of it, and he's beaten Ollie at the near post. I don't blame Ollie for this. I blame the defenders for not closing him down sooner, because the bodies were there. Someone needs to take that ownership.
We should probably do the play-by-play on this. So it's gone across the right-hand side, and Van der Sarg's risen up pretty nicely. And what I can assume is he's tried to head it towards goal and actually headed it straight across the 6-yard box to the what is now the far post, where Elvis Cam Sober is just sitting there in an acre of space with 3 defenders between Van der Sarg and Cam Sober, and no one shut him down. As you say, Cam, he took a touch and just blasted it from point blank. Sale really didn't stand a chance.
No. I mean, he gets beaten at the near post, but that's not on him. I think the bigger thing here is, you know, this is a header back across the box, and if Cam Sober had volleyed it, you know, because he had a little bit of time on his hands and it went in, well, fair play to him. You wouldn't be stoked about it. You'd still be asking where the marker was. But instead, he has all of the defenders so far away, he can bring it down. And by the time he shoots, no one's even closing him down. You know, there is no intent to try and shut him down here, let alone intent from anyone to have marked him leading up to that point. That's what worries me is not, you know, it happens sometimes, you know, you get half a yard on your marker or whatever. That's not what happened here. Just no one was interested in marking him. No one was where they should have been, and no one looked to shut him down when he did get the ball. I don't know how you're going to defend these kind of balls in if you're not going to, you're not going to mark people, you're not going to go to the ball at all. You're going to concede a few like this.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, if you've seen Cam Sober play a few times, you probably would think that marking him wasn't actually particularly useful. But, yeah, unfortunately, we have played him beautifully into form by giving him gilt-edge chances, and then he's put that one away, and all of a sudden he looked like a different player. And unfortunately, so did Caceres through that midfield. He was amazing. Work rate, but also just he had us running every which way but the right way.
Talented footballer, mate.
For sure. Yeah.
But, and I think you already hinted that the midfield looked a bit off the pace here. I think you've got a very good midfielder in Caceres and a midfield from us that wasn't offering a lot. So I'm not surprised he looked good. He took advantage of the opportunities given to him by a midfield that weren't pressuring him, weren't, you know, taking away his time on the ball. So, yeah, I think power to him. But I think we probably made him look better than he has in a while by, you know, letting him have the time, letting him have the touches, letting him have the space.
Yeah, it was a space that really worried me. The amount of times he picked up the ball and was able to, like, just run it forward.
Yeah.
Wasn't that he passed it forward or picked it up in space and distributed. He was able to stride through that midfield quite a few times. It was really disconcerting. It's not what you want to see as a centre back, that central midfielder just running straight at you while you're trying to mark other attackers. Are there any highlights in that first half for you? I mean, we saw Uffi say that no, that first half was not anything. Was there anything we can say?
Well, I think the other thing worth talking about is Sale. That obviously was in the first half. It was in fact pretty early on, not long after the goal from memory. The injury itself looked really like nothing much. He kind of got up a bit gingerly at one point, having I think he made a save maybe, and was kind of holding his leg, and then 30 seconds a minute later you saw him not take a goal kick, and he was signalling he needed to come off. And you know, it didn't look like much in it, but obviously he felt it go, and that was the end of that. And I think having never seen Paulson at this level, I think a few people were probably a bit worried about that. But he got called into action pretty quick smart with the chances we were giving Sydney. He made some good saves.
Think about Paulson. It's having watched him, yes, a step down, not at A-League level. The kid makes saves.
Yep.
He won the Player of the Season for the National League last year because of the sheer number of saves he was making. And this is a team that was still losing heavily. So he had a lot of work to do. The one thing I'll say about him is if he can sort out his communication with the lines in front of him, which obviously he hasn't had a lot of opportunity to do bar preseason, if he can sort out those lines of communication with those in front of him, he's going to be a very, very good keeper because he has the basic package, which will be hard to beat.
And it's exactly the thing I was going to praise him for the most. Like I say, he was called into action and was making some good saves. But the thing I liked most was pretty much as soon as he came on, there was a shot at him and he made a save. And the first thing he did was he was up there and he was bollocking his centre backs. He was there. He was talking. He was letting them know where they should have been, what they should have been doing. Now, whether or not that communication is going to work perfectly, I don't know. But for a young kid making his professional debut, essentially, and he's right out there and he's giving his centre backs an earful because they let a shot happen, that's a good sign that communication is going to be there. I think a lot of people at the age he's at and the inexperience level would be a bit afraid to go give their centre-backs a bollocking. He was not shying back from that at all, and I think that's probably a good sign that he feels like he knows the boys, he feels like he knows the squad, and he's not afraid. He didn't feel like he had to kind of earn his right to be there. He was there. He was going to do his job from minute one, and I think that's a good sign for where that's going to go. But as you say, there's still a lot of communication in that back line, and it's not working, and he's going to be a part of that, and they need to figure it out. But I don't think that's just backline and keeper that's been the issue there. It's obviously a new element now thrown into the mix. I think the backline on its own has been struggling with their communication and positioning and a lot of that. So there's some problems there, and perhaps he'll actually be an answer to it rather than a problem.
I've got to say he looks good. My only concern with him is he has this ability to make saves look good. Like it's, if you see really quality keepers, they make things look easy. He tends to make things look like he has done the most magnificent save. And that, I don't know how to explain it.
Saves for the camera. Yeah. That's basically what you call it. Like they're making a save, so the cameras for the cameras to show in the
real. I don't think he's doing it to, you know, to show off or anything.
He's not doing it to show off, but that's what you'd refer to it as.
Yeah. I don't know whether it's his footwork. I don't know enough about keeper's footwork, but he seems to make these big dives and I'm kind of like, hang on, that was not right in the corner. And so hopefully that was just a bit of nerves and he's just trying to find his feet and the extra pace on the ball at this level.
If he's making the saves, he can do a Curto for all I care.
Yeah, that is fair.
Make as many unnecessary dives as he wants, as long as he keeps making those saves.
Yeah. That was the first half. 1-0 down at half time, obviously a new keeper on. Didn't realistically get any better in the majority of that second half either.
To be honest, we played for 10 minutes.
Right at the very end. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that by that stage, 2-0 up. They won their Sydney. They found their mojo. They rolled a whole lot of subs, as did we. And I think that might have turned it around. Ben Old, I've thought he's been okay when he started, but when he comes off the bench, he seems to play better. Whether that's running against tired legs or what.
I actually think the kid's found his level. I really do. I think he's going to be a great asset at A-League level.
I think at that age, and he's able to start and not get shown up and still do okay, it's been good. I question how many more minutes he's going to get with the developments coming. We'll discuss later. But, yeah, he sparked them up a bit. I thought that front third looked pretty pedestrian until he came along, which, considering you've got Ball and Sotirio and Wayne there, that should not – and Piscopo, of course – that shouldn't be the case.
Yep.
Piscopo has not
really had much to add to that, mate. You've hit the nail on the head. It shouldn't be the case. It's exactly right. It should not be the case. There's plenty of attacking talent in there, but we're looking at the fact that everybody was off a step for that game. They were just everybody that was on the field for the first 80 minutes was off a step, and it showed.
Piscopo hasn't looked quite the same since he got kicked off in that. Kicked off the field in that second game, I think, was it?
But he's been kicked in every single game he's played.
I was going to say, which game did he get kicked in? I'd love to find the one he didn't get kicked in, to be honest. And I think the problem with it is, as well, teams know it works now. They know they can kick him out of a game. It's a tactic you can go in with, saying what we need to do is we need to share some fouls around and get him out of his usual flow, and it'll work. So you'd be crazy to be a team going in not thinking that that's a thing you need to get in the first 5-10 minutes is a couple fouls on him. Oh, you know, don't go in to hurt the guy, but you need to bump him around a bit, and it'll affect him for the rest of the game.
Yep. We did hear, or certainly I heard from on Twitter, one of our illustrious reffing colleagues, after I made mention of wouldn't it be nice if there was such a thing as team fouls, and he piped up and said, there is. So I question why that is not a thing. If it is in the rules that persistent infringement as a team can result in some kind of sanction.
It's the problem with refereeing directives within a league, right? Like the tools are there in the laws to do things about it, but unless you've got a directive saying we really want to implement this in our league, you know, you think about when the A-League tried to take a stand on diving, for example. You know, they targeted a season, said to the referees, you give out yellow cards for diving and we'll back you up. There's no such directive for team persistent fouling, and I think in reality, if one ref started doing it, they'd probably cop a bollocking from the assessors for doing so. And that's not how it should be, but I think realistically that is how it is. That if you're stepping out of line with what the other refs are doing, you're not going to be given a gold star for it, that's for sure.
Yeah, I do take your point. But also, I mean, from a purely commercial point of view, the product is the game. Agreed. Everyone wants to see good football. Winning football doesn't necessarily mean much as a league. So why it's not, you know, now that the game is owned by the clubs, you would think that one, it protects your investments, your players, and two, it's a better product to display and sell the rights to and make some cash out of. So I'm not a businessman, as you can probably tell by the fact that I'm wearing shorts to work.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I would love to see that directive, and I think the league's in a position where it could do it. I'm only saying I don't think it's happened.
Yep.
We're going to chat about that second goal.
Do we have to?
Because I actually think it highlights exactly what we're saying about the issues with midfield in this game. Because I can't remember who it was that picked up the ball. It's probably Caceres, because of the way he was doing it for most of the game, and just ran for 50 metres without anybody making a single challenge to him until he got to the top of the box. And by that stage, everybody's on the back foot. And as soon as he plays a through ball through, which, yes, Sutton should have done better with, there is no question, but he's also on the back foot. He's twisting to get to the ball, and a mistake happens, which leaves Lafondre completely unmarked in the box, and, you know, Paulson doesn't stand a chance. And that alone, that whole sequence of play, shows what can happen when you're 6 and you're 8 and not communicating and not playing well together. And, yeah, that was coming. And that was the route that it was coming in. You've got to question how a team can leave that much time and space for that longer period of time in midfield and not have it resolved.
Yeah. Yep.
They're a professional team. You see what's happening. You change shit to make that, to fix that problem. And it was a very, very obvious problem.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly right. I think there's clearly some mistakes in midfield that lead to this, but I can't overlook the Sutton opportunity. He has such an opportunity to put a toe on this and put it behind for a corner or maybe even a throw-in, but that it's there, it's in his stride, and all he does is look down at it, and then he waits another step or two to then throw himself into a weird kind of two-footed drop kick style lie-down thing near the ball. It's too late. The chance was there. It was at your feet. Put your toe through it, mate. You know, no one there is going to go, oh, you gave away a corner. Like, it's fine. The next person who's touching the ball is a shot in the back of the net. get a toe on it. And as a defender, that's something you need to just innately do. And someone like Tails, if that's him, that ball is out and there's no goal. Absolutely not. Just no chance.
Totally agree, mate. You hit the nail on the head there. You can't overlook the fact that he has made that mistake. And I don't want to downplay the mistake he's made, because that saves us a goal if he just gets his toe on it and nudges it out for a corner. But I don't think he gets put in that position if your midfield gets fixed.
Yeah, completely agree.
I think the other thing there is just tired legs. He's just played the majority of two games. He's played, I think, the full game in this one, and he's played, so it was 56 or 60 minutes there by the time that goal was going. And then he played in the FFA Cup game as well. I don't know how many minutes he got there, but certainly the majority of the game. And he's young and he hasn't been getting a lot of minutes. So match fitness, I reckon it was just tired legs. I mean, you see that, you know, every field on a Saturday, just come the 70th minute, defenders are just turning sluggishly and just that step too slow.
One thing we know about this season, though, is it's going to be packed like this because they're trying to get more games into a shorter period of time. You got some international windows coming up where we're going to have players that are going to get called up. The FFA Cup is later because of COVID. So, you know, this stuff happens. And with the consequences that we were talking about earlier, those games are just, they're getting pushed further out into the season. You're still going to get the fixture congestion coming up. Pros need to be aware of that.
But it's match fitness. It's not something you can simulate. Yeah,
they've got match fitness now. Match fitness now isn't a problem, because Sutton has enough matches. If he's played, like, how many games has he played now?
Two. Two games. I think he might have played the FFA Cup game. No, actually, I don't know if he did. But he's definitely played two in a row, and the rest of the season he's really got nothing since preseason.
I want to disagree and say I don't think it's tiredness. I think it looked to me like a defender who's waiting for someone to give him a call to tell him what to do. He's expecting someone to yell at him to get it away or something. And perhaps Ollie, if he was on the field, would be giving those calls. I don't know. But I think it's inexperience rather than tiredness, in my opinion, that he's young and used to someone giving him that call, rather than, you know, someone like Steve, if he gets a call, of course he does what the call is, but he also backs himself to make the right decision in that moment. Whereas I think it looked to me like a defender waiting for someone who had a better view of it to tell him what to do, and no one made a call. So whether you put that on the lack of communication or his inability to make a decision on his own, I don't know, but it looked to me like he took that one or two steps waiting for someone to tell him what to do, and then by the time he realized no one was going to give him a call, he then threw himself into that weird challenge he does end up making that's just so ineffective to be useless. But it looked to me, rather than tiredness, like inexperience and a lack of a call.
Yeah, I mean, if it wasn't legs, then he should have just been putting it out. You know, I mean, maybe it's the fact that he's by trade a defensive midfielder. I mean, but yeah, I'd expect your Masters 5 teams to be just,
but your laces through it. It didn't even need to be, you didn't even need to do much, just any touch on that and the chance is gone.
Yeah. We did manage to peg one back. Ben Old combining with Ben Wayne, double Bens. I'm sure we could come up with a better name than that to peg one back and make things a little bit nervous for Sydney in the 83rd minute. Completely unjustified.
It did feel a little fortuitous, this goal, because obviously the clearance has fallen to Ben Wayne and I mentioned this earlier, a completely unnecessary free kick that Sydney has given away. The ball has been cleared to Ben Old at the top of the box, and he just hasn't got all of a shot. I think if he gets all of a shot, it's probably not going in. But because he doesn't get all of a shot and he mistimes it, it just happens to fall to Ben Wayne, who is onside and comfortably onside. There were two players that weren't, but he wasn't one of them. So, yeah, and then he just turns and slots at home. It was nice. It was good for Wayno's confidence to get that goal.
It's a good striker's run, wasn't it? He was just on the off chance the ball bobbles through. He's going to be there and he's going to be onside. I thought that was just textbook.
Yeah.
And tidy finish. Like, everything about that was good. The ball that ends up with him is dog shit, you know? But it's irrelevant. Like, he's made the run. He's put himself in a great position for, a dog shit ball to make it to him. And good on him. Great finish. Good goal. I'm sure Sydney would have been pretty unhappy with the way it played out. They would have been looking for a clean sheet here and, to be honest, probably deserved it. But you take the chance when it's there. And it did give us kind of 5-10 minutes at the end there where we started playing some football and looking like maybe we wanted to commit a complete and utter robbery and nick a point. but didn't happen.
Thank God, I really wish we had. That would have been great because, you know.
So. I mean, we didn't deserve anything. If we had, I mean, my God, it would have just, like I say, been an absolute robbery.
Yeah.
But you would take the point and you'd, you know, bank that away.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something of note, Alex Rufer, the skipper, subbed off in the 66th minute. Is this he getting a bit leggy or was this tactical? Because I'm not a fan. Like, if your captain isn't, you know, if the only reason you take him off is because his legs have gone or something like that, I don't think if he can't adapt to the tactics, if he isn't like the first name on your starting sheet, and let's face it, I'm not his biggest fan, I'll grant you, but. Yeah,
I think it's only notable because your vice captain was also off the field. I think Ufi's showing that he doesn't mind having a captain who's not even starting games. I mean, look at Davila last year. He wasn't starting. There was no issue with that. He realized that player was more effective off the bench. Yeah. Was happy to do it, even though it was his captain. Now, there might be some discussion about whether or not Davila was really the captain in terms of leadership role or whatever, but he was the captain. He was the man with the armband, and he was coming off the bench as an impact player. So I think Ufi's showing he's comfortable doing that. I think when you've got your vice off injured, it's a bit more notable when your captain's also leaving the field at 60 minutes. But, the fact Ollie wasn't there was injury related, and, you know, you can't control that. It just is what it is. I think as well, you've already talked about the fixture congestion. You're going to have to rest some people. You can't expect Roofs to play 90 minutes every single game when there's midweek and weekend fixtures. So there's going to be a bit of that. It's a matter of, do you sacrifice them, don't give them the minutes in the cup games? Or, you know, if we look at the realistic chance of us winning a cup, maybe we should be targeting a cup run and therefore he should be playing those. So it's a tough call either way, right? So, yeah, I don't have a problem with it. I think if you've got a captain who you're dropping entirely from your squad because they're so off the pace, that'd be different. But he's still a starting player. He played his 60-minute run after playing a midweek fixture early in the week. I think it's okay.
And for me, mate, I actually think this is tactical. So different to Dave's concerns. I think in this situation where you were so poor within that midfield space, Rufer was the one trying to get back, to be fair, to make the challenge for the second goal, but he just could not get goal side to make a challenge. I think in this case it was tactical. I think the choice of player, it could have been either, but he's gone for him for the reasons Dave has pointed out, is that there's been a lot of minutes in those legs. But the change, I think, was tactical.
What did we think of Pennington? It's kind of the first time he's got serious league minutes.
I've liked the look of him in the cup game. I thought he was handy. I think there's... I think the jury's still out a bit for sure, but I think there's enough there that I like the idea of it. I hope we see more, and I hope it confirms kind of the brief flashes of something we've seen. That's about as far as I'm willing to go.
Yeah, my jury's out entirely, mate. I'll reserve judgment for another game or two yet.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I like the look of him. I like the cut of his jib, but realistically, 20 minutes. It's 20 minutes when the rest of the team's been horribly outplayed. I'm kind of,
exactly.
It wouldn't be fair to judge him. Gents, we've managed to play Sydney back into form. We've managed to play Kem Sober. I don't want to say into form because I don't know if he's ever had any. He's looked diabolical every time I've seen him, but there he is looking $1 million against us. We've done it again.
Yeah, it doesn't bear thinking about, does it?
Yeah, we have this uncanny ability to play teams horribly out of form back into form.
Yeah.
Does this turn Sydney's season around or is this a blip against us? Do we care?
I think Sydney's season was going to turn around anyway. I think the interesting one for me will be, the next game against the Mariners and games against Adelaide and some of those teams that traditionally sit at a similar level to us. I think we've already beaten the Mariners this season. I think we know how we went against them. You know, this is our first time playing Sydney. There's not much you can take from that. Whereas the Mariners, we beat last time out. I think I will be very interested to see how that goes again. I think that'll be a better barometer of whether or not we're in some kind of slump here. You know, if they put four goals past us, like the Jets did, that should be a much bigger signal of something is very, very wrong than a team who we haven't played and, to be honest, beat us every season. You know, just because they were doing badly to start this season doesn't really mean anything. They always beat us,
They will be in the playoffs come the end of the season. So yeah, I'm pretty sure the Sydney and Melbourne City are the two teams that we probably shouldn't really bother. And probably Victory in the end this season as well. Probably shouldn't take too much of a barometer against.
I think as well, the other thing here to kind of temper it against is how many previous Sydney games have we played where we were absolutely dominant and should have bloody won the thing and we went and lose it. This one, we were dog shit. We only lost 2-1.
Yeah, I don't think I'm taking much solace out of that. Thanks, Dave. Yeah, being utter dog shit is not something I'm kind of like going to get wrapped about. With the rest of the league, obviously COVID's destroying it. Most of the FFA Cup games, I think, have been postponed. Ours against Melbourne City, the Brisbane-Sydney game is also off. I don't know about the Gold Coast. Oh, yep, Gold Coast versus Victory, that's also off.
That's also postponed, yeah.
We mentioned that earlier. Victory played City last weekend. Yeah. So,
The game that was scheduled for tomorrow, Adelaide United versus Perth, that is also off. Obviously then it's Christmas Eve, Christmas Day. Boxing Day, the games haven't been called off as yet, the Jets versus Wanderers.
Game is being played behind closed doors.
Jets versus Wanderers.
That's already been announced today that game is being played behind closed doors.
But still there's the, you know, whether there's, because I haven't, I thought Jets had a player or two.
It may change if they have, but right now the only thing that isn't happening in that game is people being let in. There's no crowd there.
Okay. I think we can pretty much guarantee though there will be more fixtures that are going to get postponed. I don't see a scenario in which you've got six players at City who just played against Melbourne Victory. That six is going to be more than six, and you'd think if there were six players out on the field with COVID, you know, there's going to be a case in Victory as well. Hopefully that's not the case. It all depends on the timing of when that infection took place, but City are going to be out for a while, so their games are going to have some impacts. When you've got six in the squad, that's got to be a big number that's going to be coming in the next round of testing, you'd think. And the other teams are going to be impacted. That's just the reality. So I think at the very least, you'll see one or two games called off, but hopefully we're not talking some kind of full 14-day isolation period that's impacted here where we've got 2 weeks in the kind of peak moment of the summer where they pack the games in and really get through some fixtures that we're going to lose.
Yeah, obviously our game is not till Monday the 27th, and the Mariners as yet haven't been affected as neither have we, but yeah.
If we look at the run we've got through kind of the first week of January as well, so we played Mariners on the 27th, Adelaide on the 1st, Brisbane on the 5th, Jets on the 8th, and then it's not until Perth on the 16th that you're looking at teams that have been heavily affected so far. So we're pretty lucky in terms of what our fixture run is in that we're not playing Victory, City, you know, we're not playing those teams. Perth will be the first one that's interesting, and that's not till the 16th.
Yeah.
So we might get away with playing some of our games, unless, as you say, there's some cases in those teams that get announced.
Well, I think the good thing is that they actually caught this, right? They caught it before the next game was played, which was today. So, yeah, it sucks for the Victory game, but because they can theoretically isolate it out of the league from those teams, and hopefully they do. But obviously it's growing quite considerably again in Australia. That's going to have an impact, and I think it may continue to have an impact for the foreseeable future. There will be plenty of games this season which are going to get shifted.
Yeah, I think the good thing for the Knicks is that potentially if we can get those games, even though they're pretty close together, the last thing we want to do is have games shifted and make what's a congested season already more congested.
I disagree. I want as many games shifted to the back end of the season and played in New Zealand as possible.
Get that January open. Who cares about the games in New Zealand? Get the January window open. Let's get our players transferred in.
Well, I'm genuinely looking at with the opening of the border back in late April, that if there's still games to play and they extend the season, then we may get some games here.
Oh, I love your optimism, Cam. I do.
I've got to be.
I don't share it.
No, and that's fair. You don't have to share it. But at the moment, we've had two games of football in this country in the last 19 months. And that is just shit. And we're not going to get international football played here for at least until after the World Cup qualifiers in the middle of next year. We're not going to have any Phoenix or games in here because they can't get international players in this country until April at the earliest. And obviously that may get shifted again with the whole Omicron issue that everybody knows about and we won't go into. We have to have some kind of hope at the end of this that there's something to look forward to. And for me, that's seeing the Knicks playing here by the end of the season.
And if that doesn't happen, then get along, support your local club. Clubs are doing it tough. We would love to have more supporters down supporting the local game.
Put it over the bar at your local club is always a good idea. I'm obviously down at football pretty much every weekend as wherever possible, but in the winter season. But it would be, you know, going to the stadium and watching the Knicks play, both the women and the men. The men has always been a great experience. The fact that you are adding the women's game to it is just going to be another positive. And I really look forward to being able to have that happen before the end of this year.
That is fair. We should get on to some future developments that have been announced today, I think. So, first of all, the much rumoured transferring of Gail Sandoval has been completed.
Loan signing.
Uffie has indicated that, you know, all things going well, that, you know, that he would love for that to be made permanent. Sandoval has played in the Mexican Liga, over 100 games. So he's obviously vastly experienced, plays a wide attacking player for the most part. Doesn't have a huge number of goals, but is a creative player by all accounts. Played with Uli Davila at Santa Laguna in the 16-17 season. Believe it or not, I'm not even reading this off. That's just popped into my head. Uffie had a chat to Davila about him and got the thumbs up. So that's a positive. Obviously very experienced in a tough league. So I don't think he'll be overawed by the agricultural challenges that occur in the A-League. I guess we can reserve judgment but have high hopes.
Yeah, I think so. I think the best part of the signing for me, is that he's already in the country. He's already training with the squad, I think. He obviously can't officially transfer in until the window opens, but the fact we have him out here for a number of weeks in camp with the players, spending that time, is fantastic. I think that's a real, real benefit there. We get those kind of teething issues out of the way. Obviously, there might still be some match fitness issues or whatever to work through, but the reality is so many times you do pick up people in that January window and it's realistically not till February or, you know, maybe even the end of February until you start reaping the benefits of that. Getting him here this side of Christmas, getting him training with the squad, getting him living with the squad is a big, big win out of that. And it's not something I realized was going to be part of this deal until they announced it. But I think that while it wasn't kind of the headline, for me is such a massive benefit that's in there that some people might not have realized.
With having so many visa spots currently available, it's a no-lose situation, really, with us. It's like, if he turns out to be great, fantastic. If he doesn't, then so be it. It's not costing us anybody else's place within the squad. Yeah. So give him a shot, see how it comes off. It's a worthwhile effort.
Yep. We should mention that window opens January 14th, so he'll be available to play from then on. As Dave says, nice long run-up for him to get to know the boys and see how we can fit in and contribute. And again, yes, as Dave said and Cam have said, it would be nice to see a few more players, especially in that midfield, to come along and shore things up. The final thing we've got to talk about, that I can think of, is games that have been announced for the All Whites, playing Uzbekistan and Jordan. Some interesting opposition from the Asian Confederation?
Any game's a good game. To be honest, we need to get the minutes in the legs, need to get the team playing together. We've got the World Cup qualifying happening in March, obviously. We've got the playoff in June, assuming we get through Oceania qualifying. They need to be playing and getting minutes together. Yeah. Not in the legs, obviously, because they get that in their clubs, but get minutes together and understanding what Danny Hay actually wants them to achieve on the field. So, yeah, it's a good effort. It's been pointed out that neither side has made the final 12 AFC qualifying, so they aren't going to be the strongest teams. I'm assuming that the Uzbekistan will probably have a core of players who played here during the 2015 Under-20s World Cup. There'll probably be a decent number of those guys playing in there, so we've probably watched them all play if you came along to Endeavour Park in that lead up to that tournament. So I think good move, get the minutes, get the games.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's good to have some games under the belt, and you're completely right about it was actually a conversation of Dale and Boxy, friends of the podcast, were having around the last 12, and I think Dale's completely right in that he said, you know, if they're not making the last 12 in there and out of AFC, you really have to be targeting wins against those two sides if you plan to make any sort of advance in your World Cup qualifying. These are a good barometer of teams we need to be beating in order for that to shine through in terms of our World Cup qualification aims there, right? So while they're decent names and decent sides, I think anything less than targeting wins here is going to be problematic in terms of that later qualification, right?
So totally agree.
Yeah, totally right. That being said, they're not horrible teams either. AFC is a particularly flat confederation. While they're consistently below the 12, they're not horrible teams by any stretch. Mostly professional players there, so much higher standard than we get out of Oceania, and obviously something that we desperately need. Is the Oceania qualifying been officially sorted out? Because we had the previous thing that basically we wouldn't have players for at least part of it, and there's been an appeal set up, but I didn't know.
It hasn't been completed yet as far as I'm aware.
No, I'm not aware of anything changing. Basically part of the tournament as it's announced will occur outside the window, and that is the last official announcement of any sort. Obviously, we've kicked up some stink about it. I know the Federation did, and Chris Wood did as well, personally. So I think it'll be interesting to see where that goes, but I also wouldn't hold my breath on footballing bureaucracy solving that.
No, I think you're more likely to see them get the players get released for the tournament, but not a change of the window. I think that's probably what's most, it'll be a directive from FIFA come out to those particular clubs of Oceania players, but there won't be an extension of the window issues there. So yeah, it's going to be a plaster over a paper cup, basically. I can't see there being any massive change when it comes to this.
One thing that I did find interesting and positive is that Uffy has made noises about making next players available, if at all possible. Obviously, the relations with New Zealand football are going pretty well at the moment, so hopefully that continues. And if a few players can get released outside the window, that would be fantastic. I think
if you could think someone like if you're missing like Ollie and Payne and Clayton Lewis, three who would, I would assume, walk into a 25-man squad for the All Whites, and having those three available could be massive. It's a awesome step from Ufi to say that this could happen.
Yeah, I'm not sure that maybe he's particularly going, you can have all of my starting lineup, but
no, he's
even if
he
can
not.
Release a couple of guys for those early games and get them back later on.
I also think we're going to be... by March, we know we're not going to be in with a chance at the playoffs, right? We know how the season's going to pan out. And making those guys available for a couple of the games in Asia isn't going to make a difference.
Yeah, and I think the whole scenario is kind of buoyed by the fact that they're in Australia and the quarantine restrictions and general border controls are much easier there than they would be if those players were in New Zealand. I think realistically, if those players were at home not playing for the Phoenix, the chances would probably be lower of them being able to go than they are being over in Australia with the Phoenix. So I think it's Ufi recognizing the position they're in and doing them a solid. But obviously, as you say, relationship there is good. But he also realizes because of the way Australia's settings are at the moment that he can potentially get them out for 48 hours and also have them back in 48 hours. You know, it's not going to be weeks in quarantine. It's not going to be any of that stuff we would have been looking at if the restrictions were different.
Well, let's wrap it up there, gents, on a note of positivity. That will be all for us tonight. Have a lovely holiday period. Enjoy your festivities. Don't drive after drinking. Be good people.
Is that something you traditionally do at Christmas, is it, Frosty?
No, mate, it's normally at my place.
He's channeling Jeremy Brockie's goals, man, remember?
Yep.
No, have a great Christmas, everyone.
Yeah, have a good one, folks. Thanks for listening.
Cam's going to sing for you in our Patreon special this week.
Really fucking not.
Cam will not sing for you if you subscribe to the Patreon. How you?
Yeah. If you go on the Patreon, which you should do, you don't have to listen to me sing.
Bye.
Porous midfield brings Sydney.
Turnstile of a midfield brings you.
The next Jeffrey Sarpong brings you.
Ooh, cool. Yeah,
someone's got to get it on the record just in case.
Yeah.
Either way, I want it on the record. If he's fantastic, I want to be the first one to have called them Sarpong on the record.
Alex Rufer is Mike Brearley of football brings you.
Merry Jingle Fucking Christmas brings you.